Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player.
This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking Sicario.
Where is he? Who is he looking for?
Where are the chems?
Where are the chems?
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hola!
Out Now is a film podcast, which is Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, then jump back to other fun movie topics. This is episode 210.
That's not an area code. Maybe... No, it is. Los Angeles. There you go.
Exactly, 210.
Previously, we had the Central Valley in California. Now we've got Los Angeles.
Is our Los Angeles guest, is he 210? Are you 210?
I still have my 510 Bay Area area code.
Oh,
so.
Oh okay.
From the Bay.
Yeah.
Okay, keep it down. We'll get to you.
pretend like you're not here.
This is episode 210, as I said, and this week we were talking Sicario, the new crime thriller from director Denis Villeneuve.
Yep.
All right.
Oh yeah, let's make sure we get this clear right now. So
Villeneuve, Flock of Seagulls, got it. Okay. And so joining us today, we have from Fast Film Reviews, he's the man who made his own border. It's Mark Hoban.
Hi everyone.
And from Awards Circuit, he was recruited for a shadowy government assignment. It's Terrence Johnson.
Hi.
how are you both doing today?
Great.
Good.
All right. Good.
Awesome.
I'm trying to survive the scorch, which is known as Los Angeles in a heat wave. So,
for me, it's known as the trials I went through to get through the maze. So that's what I have to deal with. We are talking Sicario. We have Mark and Terrence with us to talk Sicario and other things, of course. Before we get to that, let's get to some show notes stuff here. First up, we have a new commentary, brand new commentary out now. Hence this podcast, exactly. We recorded a new Bond commentary. I think some of you might remember that we did four different James Bond commentaries back before Skyfall came out. And Brandon and myself were talking about what to do next, so we realized we hadn't done a Timothy Dalton James Bond film. Of course, everyone knows that those are, you know, the top two best James Bond films ever, so why would we skip doing those? But we did. Brandon, Scott Mendelson, Randy Schaffer, myself all participated in a commentary for The Living Daylights. So that is currently available on iTunes, and I know you guys love the commentaries, so it's right out there for you to find. Well, let's see, what else? iTunes reviews and ratings, good to get those. Helps out our show, helps other people find our show. If you want to log into iTunes, search Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You'll find our show. You can click on it. You can give us a star rating. That'd be great. And then you can write some kind of sentence of a review or whatever you want, really. That doesn't seem to matter. It just
multiple sentences to make a paragraph if you want.
That's certainly a way to go, but the star rating, that'd be cool. It helps pump up the show in the old podcast feed for...
If somebody writes a review and says, pump up the jam, that'd be great.
Exactly, yes.
If someone... Pump up the jam and pump up the volume.
Yeah,
pump
they just volume? Keep on writing pump, like pump, pump, pump
dance,
it up.
Dance. All right, that's enough of that.
we'll save it for the show.
But yes, thanks in advance for anyone that heads on to iTunes.
Indeed, thank you in advance. We appreciate it.
All right, moving on here. Let's get to Know Everybody, where each week we'd ask each other a couple questions or two to set the tone for the podcast. I better get to Know Everybody. All right. That was good. It's pretty good, guys.
Was I supposed to chime in with that?
If we get one guest to do it, that's a win, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good way to go on that one. I'm going to start this one off.
Okay.
How do you prefer your hitman? Sardonic or scary?
Oh, definitely scary. All business.
All business?
Yeah. I don't need to know what he's doing or she's doing, and just don't shoot me in the back.
So Joe, you're judging this more like a real life scenario if you were to encounter a hitman.
Yeah, unless I guess you're going for like some sort of.
Well, what about on film?
I do enjoy the funny ones, but we're talking about Sicario. It's a little bit more of a serious film.
Yeah, I'm just talking in general, though. I'm not saying necessarily Sicario. What do you guys think? We'll get it up with
I like my hitman with a little bit of sarcasm, so probably more sardonic.
Murder
needs a little bit of humor.
I'll take mine scary. Yeah. Just Terrence. Intimidation and get the job done.
I mean, I certainly admire a lot of the scarier hitmen out there. You have, like, your Anton Chigurhs and whatnot, but, Gross Point Blank and Pulp Fiction are two of my favorite films ever, so it's kind of hard to not say Sardonic.
Well, even Jules and Vince, they had to get into character, right? So.
Yeah, but when you know when they're off duty, you know they like to have some, they like to have fun like the rest of us.
That is true. He did ask him if he wanted a foot rub.
So. But if you're gonna go, isn't it better to go with a laugh?
Yeah. That's what Brett thought, and then he got shot a bunch of times for calling for not confirming whether or not Marcellus Wallace was a bitch. So, yeah. I mean, it doesn't really...
Brains weren't big enough, Brett. Yeah. Sorry.
He shot Flock of Seagulls, too. People don't remember that part. And Marvin in the face, but, you know, he...
Well, he was legitimately asking Marvin a question and must have hit a bump or something.
I didn't know bump. all right, Abe, you're up.
All right, so if you guys were offered a trip to Juarez, Mexico... Would you go?
No.
All right.
Probably
I'd rather
not.
Go to Honduras.
Rather go to Honduras. Okay, there you go. I mean, a free trip.
Which is also pretty scary.
A free trip, like with
free
police
hotel
detail.
Accommodations. You know, it's you're going to be with a tourist group. Airfare or bus fare paid. No? Still no?
No.
All right.
Still no.
What am I going to Juarez for? What am I going to, what do I have to accomplish there?
The chiclets.
Like it's the chips
that they sell to you on the way back from Ensenada.
There's a lot of like, it's not like a particularly like scenic spot. Like I'm sure there's like history there to like look at or whatnot, but like there's not.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you go there for the Tex-Mex, the authentic Tex-Mex.
The Tex-Mex.
On Wiki Travel, there is Juarez is on there, and there's a bunch of things to see. The Guadalupe Mission. There's a Juarez History Museum.
See, sounds like Mark's already
there's a monument to Benito Juarez, so yeah, there's stuff to do.
A lot of great things to see if it was a free trip. I personally wouldn't go either, but I just wanted to ask if you guys would go.
I'm trying to sucker us into this Juarez trip, and don't tell me you got a timeshare that I have to help you with this thing.
I do.
It's very reasonable rates.
All right, good. That's enough of that. That's how you play.
No, everybody.
All right, moving on. Let's get to that. No quickies.
DM.
Each week at Out Now, we have one movie we see during the week that we talk about the episode of the movies that we see during the week. So, no quickies.
DM.
I got it.
Yep. I was listening very intently.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. Abe, have you seen any other movies this week?
Yes, I saw Everest, and it's a sad movie.
It is.
I did see it in IMAX, which I think it might have been the preferred method of seeing it.
You mean like seeing it in IMAX would be probably the best way of saying the movie?
Yeah, that and also
you think that was a good
other...
hint when I told you that out loud?
Well, some other folks as well, like, you know, some other national critics and friends of mine. But there were some folks that I genuinely thought were going to make it down who didn't. And I think that when you look at it from that aspect of, well, I really hope that this guy makes it because they seem to be a vehicle for you in the film, then it's kind of very sad. And you sort of get hints of some things. I did some research afterward, and I was like, I wonder why they're kind of hinting at John Krakauer kind of being a little bit standoffish or what have you. And there's controversy about him if you read two accounts of it from the Russian guy who seemed to just go up Everest with no oxygen. But on the whole, It's a pretty okay movie, and again, I think that it's just more that it's kind of a devastating thing because you know it's going to happen.
So obviously, you weren't like too familiar with the true story.
Well, I was familiar with the book Into Thin Air, but I'd never read it, and I knew that it was based off of it. It's just that
the quote unquote facts of the case.
Yeah, this is based off the facts, and this is just based off the 1996 big storm that hit.
So we've all seen Everest at this point, then?
Yes.
Yes.
Mark, what did you think of Everest?
I really liked it. I saw it in IMAX 3D, and generally, I'm not a fan of 3D films, but this is one of the rare cases where I think the size of the screen too, but it really helped the experience. It was really stunning cinematography. There's one part where the camera is like sweeping over this suspension bridge, and I actually felt like I was getting acrophobia in the theater. I mean, it was really kind of scary. So I think the drama does a good job of presenting what it would really be like to tackle this endeavor and climb Mount Everest. And they do a good job of presenting like how they're preparing for it and acclimating to the thin air and getting their bodies ready for it. And I thought it is a straightforward tale, but I think the genuine drama that exists within the true story is enough to captivate the viewer. And so I really enjoyed it quite a bit.
What about you, Terrence?
I also saw Everest in IMAX 3D. It's tough for me to speak about it because I don't know if like Everest is a movie that you like so much as you endure. I mean, there's lots of stuff to like about it. I thought that the sound design was great and the cinematography was good. And I've never been more, I don't think I've been that stressed in a movie just hoping that somebody would get these people down. I don't know if I enjoyed it because I was so depressed by the end, but it's really, really good filmmaking. I do think that the 3D really helps because it lent another sort of sense of scale to like them actually having to climb Mount Everest. Like when they make it to the top, you're like, they're up really, really high because you sort of experienced just how tough it was to get up there.
Yeah, it is weird to kind of, I don't know why, like, Everest has presented to me such a challenge of, like, how much I've liked it and how much I'd want to, like, recommend. Like, because I do recommend it. Like, I do think it's, like, a movie. You should go see this movie because it does a good job of doing what it needs to do. But at the same time, it's, like, it's not a movie, like, I'm ever really going to watch again, I don't believe.
Yeah,
and especially because the IMAX experience of it does make a difference. It's one of those kind of rare films. And I don't even think the 3D is necessarily that great, but I think the scale of, like, the it doesn't even have IMAX cameras, but just kind of having that like large scale presentation, it makes that movie much more worthwhile, I think. To go with that, you have like a strong cast here. I mean, it's a great cast. Like, I'm surprised actually this, like, the ads for the movie doesn't really highlight how big this cast is. I mean,
you know, I think one of the things that the cast does for the film is a little bit like what casts in the 70s for disaster films did, like the Poseidon Adventure or Towering Inferno. It provides sort of characters that you sort of already know, like, oh, I know Jake Gyllenhaal, you know, so there's sort of, even though he's not doing a lot of acting, I mean, he's just sort of this, I mean, he's very small part of the film, but I think, you know, these different Jason Clarke, they add Josh Brolin, they add to the film, just by the fact that you sort of recognize them. I think that helps.
I completely
Emily
agree.
Blunt,
yeah.
I mean, Keira Knightley, I mean, they're all... Robin Wright. I mean, they all pop in. You know, some of them are.
Oh, that wasn't Catherine O'Hare? Kind of looks like Catherine O'Hare, younger.
but it adds to it. Even though they're not giving, you know, like a performance per se, they do add to the film just
Emily
by
Watson.
Sake of being famous.
Okay. Emily Watson. I was like, what?
Hey. Wait, who were you thinking of before?
He said Emily Blunt. I was like,
oh, did I say
oh,
Emily
yeah.
Blunt?
Yeah. I was like, Emily Blunt was in the movie?
No, but I know exactly what you
mean.
That's
Sicario on the brain, because
exactly.
Josh Brolin was in both, actually. Yeah.
He was. It was a double dipping of Josh Brolin.
Actually, it was like, I didn't tweet this, but I will say this on this, you know, this very widely listened to podcast. Between Black Mass and Everest, it seemed like every white actor in Hollywood is employed the last weekend.
It's like a Lincoln year all over again.
Yeah, exactly. I see what you're saying, though, Mark, completely, where you have the... It's not a movie that's about deep characterization because it's an ensemble film that's more of depicting an event that occurred rather than, you know, giving you every single person's intense, detailed backstory. And so by having so many familiar character actors for the most part, it gives you a good sense of, like, you can follow along because you have this kind of familiarity with the actor already in mind as opposed to having to, you know, learn everything about that person.
Right.
With that in mind, Sam Worthington.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, good seeing Sam Worthington again.
It was good, like, in just like a role that was like, oh, that
very
works.
Subtle role. Yeah.
He was there for like 5 seconds.
He did enough where I'm like, oh, okay, I care.
I was like, oh man, he's a good buddy. Tried to help.
But yeah, Everest, it's out. Like, it expanded this week, so it's like it's playing everywhere now.
It should
but
be
I,
everywhere.
I would say, you know, go the extra mile and climb a mountain. No, go to IMAX if you want to. Get kind of the full experience of Everest.
Get the real experience by climbing.
I can't wait for everyone to download the digital copy and watch it on their iPhone. That's going to be a great way for them to experience
it. It's
going to
be
Everest.
Great, yeah, especially when they have the ultraviolet edition. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. Moving on. Terrence, what other films have you seen recently?
Well, Everest was the big one that
I
saw.
What was the one before that?
Scorch Trials.
Yes.
Which I didn't like.
Were you a fan of The Maze Runner?
I was a fan, and I've read the books, so I'm very familiar
oh.
with the material. This was adapted from my least favorite of the three books.
Oh, okay.
And I think the thing that's sort of sticking with me with these is, like, they're fixing the problems from the books, but then in doing that, it's like taking a little bit of the soul out. So when you're seeing it on screen, like, I had issues sort of where it felt like they were trying to be Mad Max Fury Road with, like, the action set pieces moving the characters forward to new locations. But it was like once I saw one zombie crank attack, and I had to sit through three more with, like, a Transformers-esque scene of them trying to cross a building that was tilted and not fall out of glass. It got to be a little much.
I don't think the term zombie crank attack is going to be used enough in life, so I want to hear that more.
the zombie crank attacks. Called the cranks. It was like, if this to me felt like it was, you know, Spamalot, the musical based off of Holy Grail.
Yeah.
They call it lovingly ripped off. This felt like lovingly ripped off of a lot of the big action movies. It felt like watching World War Z. With, like, some Terminator, Salvation, and Hunger Games thrown in.
I could agree with
that. And I never felt like the characters were in any real danger of not getting to where they needed to go.
I agree with you on those points. I had a minor positive recommendation just because it's like I'm still interested in this world enough, but it does like it does make me like hope that the director Wes Ball like goes on to something more worthwhile, just because I do think as much as the action
he's doing some Norse mythology movie for Fox.
All right.
Oh, okay.
I do think he has an eye for action. Like, as much as, like, the actions he's might call to, you know, other things you've seen before, I do think he presents his action cleanly enough where I can follow what's going on. And I'm always a fan of that. I am a fan of following what's going on when it comes to action sequences. So. All right. Mark Hoban, what else have you seen recently?
Well, have you guys talked about the documentary Steve Jobs?
No, we haven't.
So I thought, I'll talk about that because that's coming up, you know, the actual fictional version is coming up in a week or two. And I really liked the documentary quite a bit. I mean, I had read some good things about it, but I actually, I think I enjoyed it even more than I was led to believe. I thought it was actually really quite well done. And I haven't read the book that it's based on. So most of the stuff, and I've never really followed him that closely. So a lot of the stuff was kind of new for me. And there is something to be said, even if you have read the book, of seeing it presented on screen and done in sort of the way that it's done. But I thought there were some kind of revelations in it, and he is kind of a very interesting person. Definitely quite different from the very carefully presented image that obviously the Apple company has always presented of him. And I imagine some of that's going to be in the upcoming film, too. I don't know exactly how the upcoming film will portray him, but the documentary is fairly critical. I mean, it definitely cherishes him as a genius, which is almost a fact at this point. But it also there's quite a bit of stuff even in his personal life and the way that he treated people and things that if you aren't aware of it, it's kind of surprising, some of it.
Didn't know. That's streaming now, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's actually on demand.
It was in theaters for quite a while too.
The director is Alex Gibney, who also did Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, and also We Steal Secrets, The Story of WikiLeaks. So he's quite
talented. Going Clear as well?
Did he All Clear? Going Clear.
Oh yes, he did do that. Yes.
Oh man, I saw the first 6 minutes of Going Clear.
But you should watch the other.
I should watch the
hour
rest of
and 54 minutes because it's a good documentary.
Typical Abe. I do want to see the rest of it. I there was like that tease on YouTube or you know when they were doing it. I was like, wow, this is really engaging.
So have any of you seen it, the documentary?
I have not seen it yet.
Oh, I would watch it before you see unless you've seen it already. But watch it before you see Jobs.
Yobs?
Yes, just Steve Yobs.
Esteban Yobs.
Yeah, I think it might be a good. I think it probably would be better to see the documentary first, and then and then watch the fictional. But
yeah, I mean, I've read a lot about Steve Jobs. I know quite a bit, but I mean, yeah, certainly you know enjoy the idea of seeing the documentary. It's just a matter of if I have the time to. I would like to because I do think Steve Gibney's a good documentary filmmaker. So
yeah, I don't know. You know that documentary category at the Oscars is so bizarre to me. But I would nominate this. I don't know if it's going to qualify and what the rules are, but. I think Amy about Amy Winehouse was also very good. So, as far as I'm concerned, this is shaping up to be a really good year for documentaries.
Mm-hmm. I've seen a couple things, and I don't really want to kind of not mention one. So I'm just gonna go with both. Mm. First up is The Green Inferno because I saw that like weeks ago, but it's finally out, and I can finally start talking about it. This is the Eli Roth cannibal family fun film. If you enjoy a good cannibal movie, and I'm sure there's plenty of you out there, they're like, man, I do need a good cannibal movie. This is a good one. I don't think it's Eli Roth's best film, and I do like his hostile films. I like them for more than just the fact that, hey, look at the gore. There's actually just some very interesting stuff going on that I think is pretty neat from a social commentary perspective. But Green Inferno,
where does it take place?
Where does Green Inferno take place?
Yeah.
The Amazon.
Okay.
This movie, it's not as deep as other Eli Roth films are, but I do think it once it gets going, and it takes a little bit to get going because there's like, oh, let's set up the characters and their plight kind of thing when the stuff is really poorly acted, like it weirdly, like I feel like it feels so like badly like put together that like Eli Roth has some kind of joke about what this is, and then it gets to like the more insane stuff, and it's like, okay, well at least that's over with, but that stuff is quite good because Eli Roth's a good horror filmmaker when it comes to kind of building the tension and you know getting into you know the gore stuff, and he has Nicotero on there who's you know legendary in this field among others like Tom Savini or whatnot, but there is like a buy-in scene in terms of like, hey, you want to see how gory we can get, well here's like the opening kill, and it's pretty crazy when it comes to a cannibal horror film.
I've read somewhere that some folks had walked out. Did anybody leave during your screening?
So Peter and I, a friend of the show, Peter Paris, saw this film, and it was in a small screening room with, like, I think, like 10 or 15 people. And one guy got up during that one scene and left, and he did not come back.
Okay.
so he's like, oh, that's
it. Not his cup of tea.
But it's like, once it gets past this one key sequence, which is like the first big scene in terms of like horror craziness, nothing else is ever as gory as that. So. Mm. Which I know has kind of been the complaint for some people that saw this movie. They're like, it wasn't gory enough. I'm like, all right, well, I think the kind of the way it builds tension and crafts kind of terror of like, you know what could come again. I think that is kind of milked for all it's worth for this movie. So I think it's okay. This is his first movie, like directed film since 2007, since Hostel 2. So it's like, all right, well, at least he's doing something. I'm just like,
you know,
hanging
it always makes
there,
me. Yeah. Smile about a film like this where people walk out because not that they're – I mean I wouldn't even go see this film. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be the one walking out because I wouldn't even go. But I think if you've done a little bit of research and figure like, okay, I'm going to see this cannibal horror film. It's directed by Eli Roth. You probably should have a good idea what to expect.
Yeah, you'd think that. And I'd be more curious about, rather than what the box office was, what the walkout ratio was this weekend for The Green Inferno. This is on like 1,000 screens or whatever. The other thing I'm going to mention, I guess, real quick, because we've been going along for now, quickies, is Pawn Sacrifice.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to find that. But
this is this is the story of Bobby Fischer, a biopic about Bobby Fischer, played by Tobey Maguire for this film. And it kind of chronicles it goes over his life, really. I mean, it does kind of eventually center on the kind of the huge chess match between him and the various folks from the Soviet Empire during the Cold War. And I think it's pretty good. I was surprised that it's an Edward Zwick film who generally makes bigger movies. I mean, you know, like something like, I don't know, like Blood Diamond or The Last Samurai.
Glory.
Defiance wasn't ever a big film, but it was, you know, more scale. For this movie, just kind of like kind of came and like no one really seems to know about it, but it's like playing like in every theater around me, and it's written by Stephen Knight, who I like quite a bit. The movie, I wouldn't say it's You know, I do like the movie quite a bit. I would say it's like Zwick's best film. I wouldn't say it's like a favorite film of the year for me, but I think it's really very good. I think Tobey Maguire does a good job of capturing Bobby Fischer and his very kind of his crazy ego and his paranoia for that matter. And I think Liev Schreiber, who
Ray Donovan himself.
Ray Donovan himself as the what's his name? As Spassky, Boris Spassky. He's a fun rival too. I like Liev Schreiber in general, so I'm always happy shout him out when I can.
People need to see Goon.
Yes, but no, it's I think it's just a well produced film overall. It's it takes on kind of it's a mix of biopic and like sports movie, and for being a movie about chess, it's interesting to see how Zwick kind of attempts to cinematically capture a chess tournament and how that kind of plays out.
I'm very excited to see this film, so I've been meaning to see it as soon as I can.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's playing, it's out now apparently. I mean, it's around, so yeah, catch it if you can. All right, that was it, quickies.
Yep.
Let's move on now. Let's move on to trailer talk, where we get to one of the newest movie trailers of the week. We talk about when it's coming out, what we think of it, and what have you. And this week we have The Big Short, which is a film starring. There's a list here. Christian Bale, Brad Pitt, Ryan Gosling, Steve Carell, Melissa Leo, and just a bunch of other people. And it's from director Adam McKay, who has, of course, done the Anchorman films, The Other Guys, Step Brothers, Talladega Nights, The Legend of Ricky Bobby. Full title on that one, of course. And this is his big kind of drama coming out film. I mean, he's doing a film about basically a number of bankers that have kind of predicted the financial crisis before it happened and want to
make some profit off of it.
Exactly. It's based off a book by Michael Lewis, who of course wrote Moneyball, and I am quite interested in something like this just because Adam McKay, he's done comedies, but in something like The Other Guys, for example, he very much likes to inject social commentary into his films.
That's what I would have said. Yeah.
And so seeing him do basically a film that it seems like he's been wanting to do, I'm very curious as to what this, you know, full scale drama is, you know, has for us. With that in mind, Mark Hoban, what did you think of the trailer for The Big Short?
I'm actually my curiosity has piqued. There's almost like a genre now of like financial films. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about a few like Margin Call and Boiler Room, The Wolf of Wall Street. And so, you know, with the cast and the fact that Brad Pitt is behind it, who I did not recognize, actually, I watched the trailer cold and then I went through the cast list and I'm like, Brad Pitt, was he in that? And I looked at it again. I'm like, oh, okay. He's that guy that's all like with the glasses and everything. But anyway, I actually think this looks like something I might enjoy. The title is sort of strange. I'm not sure how many people are aware of what the concept of short selling is, and so it's an odd title for the mainstream film, but that's just as far as marketing is concerned, but as far as the film is concerned, I think it actually looks pretty interesting.
Terrence?
I was surprised at how it's humorous it seemed, but then you mentioned who the director was, and I was like, oh, I should have known that it wouldn't just be like a standard sort of biopic thing. I mean, everybody has like a different hairstyle from how they normally look. So I mean, hey, there's your makeup Oscar dark horse or something. But
the,
no, I'm intrigued.
The wig budget was huge.
Yes, I'm intrigued.
Abe?
Yeah, I'm intrigued too. It's got a lot of the good backing from folks that I like in general. And again, you had mentioned that Adam McKay, he slips messages into his movies, and again, Anchorman 2 is a little bit more about where mainstream media is today and how news is all about, you know, getting your attention and keeping you on the station by putting a bunch of stuff on the screen and kind of going with these side news stories that don't really do anything except for entertain. And so he's done that with a lot of other movies as well. I'm curious to see how this one will go. I didn't read the source material, but everyone that's involved is interesting, and Ryan Gosling looks quite tan, so we'll see how
that
goes.
Always a good selling point in any film. Ryan Gosling looks quite tan.
And he's using a lot of palm olive, or not palm olive, pomade, so it's good to know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to echo the same thoughts, and I've already kind of highlighted the main reason why I am. I like seeing directors take on, you know, something, you know, kind of new for them. And Adam McKay is director I like. I do think, like, not only do I like, you know, a lot of his films, but I do think they're generally well directed as far as kind of mainstream big comedies go. So I am curious to see, you know, what he has to offer in a film that's, you know, outside of his the wheelhouse he's generally known for. Mm-hmm. And the cast, you know, certainly sells it as well. The hair for all these people. Christian Bale got me. It's like, oh, he looks so weird. And then he has that accent, of course, too. It's based off a Michael Lewis book, so that tends to work well. So, we'll see. The Big Short is opening, and I believe it was supposed to be arriving in theaters next year, and then, like, Paramount, like, saw a cut of the film, and they're like, this is great. Like, let's release this sooner, and we can get it in the Oscar race. So that's kind of what happened. So it's going to be coming out around Christmas. It's going to spread probably wide Christmas. I think it comes out a little earlier than that. Basically, so it can be kind of in awards contention. We'll see, you know, as far as that goes. But for the time being, the film arrives in theaters this Christmas. So that should be something to look forward to. All right. That out of the way, let's move on now. Let's get to our main film review for the delightfully family-friendly Sicario.
You want to be a part of this?
Do we get an opportunity of the men responsible for today?
The men who are really responsible for today.
Ever been to Juarez before?
We're going to El Paso, right? You're not American.
No.
What do you work for now?
Well, I go where I'm sent.
That should have been some of the trailer for Sicario. This is a film focused on the war on drugs to a point, as a government task force headed up by Josh Brolin recruits FBI agent Kate Mercer, played by Emily Blunt, to join on a hunt for an elusive drug lord. She becomes a part of a team that also includes the mysterious Alejandro, played by Benicio del Toro, who has an intensity that matches the kind of assignment this is. This is from director Denis Villeneuve, who previously directed Prisoners and Enemy, along with the Oscar-nominated Incendies. Mark Hoban, you're a fan of those films that I've mentioned, I believe.
I was.
What did you think of Sicario?
I like Sicario. I thought it was an experience. And I think what the director does in this is he kind of creates this sort of air of hopelessness throughout the film. And I didn't think that the film was particularly detailed, but I think what he's really trying to go for is more a mood and sort of give the viewer kind of a... you are their perspective of what it's like to be in this world sort of along the border. And Emily Blunt is sort of this almost naive FBI agent that's sort of thrown into the mix. And she doesn't really quite know what's going on. She's even who she's working for and like what exactly Josh Brolin's title is and Benicio del Toro's title is a little unclear to her and to the audience. And I think for quite a bit of the film, we're kind of like not even sure exactly what's going on other than we're trying to get this drug lord and, you know, bring him to justice. But I thought the mood that he creates is really good, and I think if there's an MVP in this film, it's Roger Deakins and his cinematography. I think it is absolutely stunning, and we can go a little bit into detail about some of the set pieces and stuff, but some of the aerial shots of the desert, there's a night vision raid that's real kind of exciting near the end of the film, and even there's this sort of dinner scene at the climax with these close-ups of people's faces and things. And I think Roger Deakins really should get a lot of the credit for the way that this, for the success of this film, because I think for me, that's kind of what, it's very visceral. And I think that is what kind of put me into the mix of the film. And I would also just quickly mention the score as well. It really complemented the action. That was Johan Johansson, and I'm not sure if the last thing he did, but a very famous movie he did recently was The Theory of Everything. And mm-hmm. that lush orchestral score is totally different from the score in this, which is very spare. It's almost, I don't even know if you'd call it musical. It's almost like just like tones and things like that. But does a really good job of creating this sort of mood.
Terrence, what did you think of Sicario?
I liked it a lot. At first, when I got out of the theater, I was a little less high on it just because of how it is, and sort of Emily Blunt is the main character, but we spend significant portions with other characters and sort of, but I think it works really, really well as like a portrait of like what's happening. I will too echo the sentiments of Roger Deakins. One of my favorite shots in the movie is where they're going into Mexico and we sort of start on them. And it's like close on the cars and then the shot continues to move out. So you see like how tough their odds are just by virtue of the fact that it's like these four black cars on a freeway with all of Juarez to come. And so I think Deakins was great. My favorite part was Benicio del Toro. I just thought he was spectacular. And it really does fill you with a sense of dread. Like there's, you very much feel like Emily Blunt's character going in and there's like no way out by the end, but it's really the technical side of it is where the movie really shines. The sound mix is great as well as the score. So I enjoyed it a lot.
Abe.
Yeah, I certainly liked it as well. I agree with Mark that it's just not as detailed as maybe I would have thought. It reminds me a lot of Training Day per se, except that Emily Blunt is a little bit more experienced than Jake Hoyt in that movie. So it's just that she's not exposed to the side of how, I guess, operations might be run in the CIA. And that's what makes it interesting is just the lengths in which the U.S. might go to make a dent in the cartel empires. And I do think that MVP of the movie is Benicio del Toro, and you guys are all right that it's a big technical achievement. Roger Deakins does do a very good job. My favorite scene is when they're gonna go to this newly acquired tunnel that they found, and you just see the soldiers and everybody fade into the darkness as it's sunset. And I was like, oh, this is a great allusion to them quote unquote disappearing to go do this mission. And what Mark said, it's just tonally very. I think the tone is what they're trying to get across. And he did Prisoners, and I think that we liked Prisoners enough. There are some weird things about it, but the thing
my
I
favorite
did
thing
like,
about Prisoners was Deakins actually. So
was it? Yeah. I the other thing that I liked about Prisoners was Jake Gyllenhaal, and that's because that's a character that you can kind of latch on to. That's sort of a neutral party, but he's enough for you to take you through the movie. Whereas I feel as in this one, there was nobody really to latch on to. You're supposed to be there with Emily Blunt's character, Agent Macy. And again, it's just because she's a little bit out of the loop on things, which maybe it's because this is the first time writer from, I forget his name, but
Taylor Sheridan.
He's been in a lot of movies and done a lot of acting and whatever else, but this is his first writing credentials. And maybe that's the reason why. It's just he had this great idea, but just didn't develop some of the characters. But on the whole, it's a pretty good movie, again, from the aspect of, wow, this is kind of how we would do things. Now, that's very interesting. And again, everything else that what Terrence and Mark had said, I just echo.
I think the film's fantastic. I you talk about the lead-in character. If with Emily Blunt, and maybe it's not like the most, you get the most like, you know, biggest look at what she's doing. I think that's completely intentional. I love the way it gives us these characters that we get like enough about them. I feel like we have everything we need to know to kind of get us through a film that focuses on these people for the amount of time we get them in. But I love the way it depicts process. You guys mentioned that it may not be as detailed as you want it to be. I think it's as detailed as it needs to be for us to like witness care. It reminded me of a lot like something like David Mamet films where the dialogue is very direct and to the point, but it's not about things that are specific. It's more about communicating a sense of tone and understanding that these characters already have without having to necessarily fill you in on every single detail of what every single person's saying. And that's largely because I think the movie is a big mood piece. I think it's all about the style that it has. I think this is a chance for Denis Villeneuve to really show off what he can do in a kind of a more mainstream film, much like he did with Prisoners, but Prisoners is more, the story there is obviously, you know, intensely personal based off the familial setting and what have you. This movie it's an action film, really. It just happens to have a lot of art house sensibilities. And
see, you say it's an action film. I think it's actually more of like a horror thriller film.
I think it's
disguised
in the mask
of like a crime drama.
It's a mix of a lot of things, I think, but I think it's because of where Villeneuve his background is and what kind of films he's made in the past. And I know Incendies, and he's made a number of other films that I really want to catch up on, but just kind of reading about the other films he's done, it seems like he's kind of bridging a gap between kind of crime thriller action type film mixed with kind of smaller films and films of a different sort of scale. With that in mind, I think he just succeeds so tremendously here. I think, yes, the movie builds a sense of dread, and I'm never quite like at ease during the film, which is, I think, a huge compliment if I'm like completely enthralled in what's going on. But it helps that it's not full of darkness. I mean, you have Josh Brolin, who has this such a kind of a laid back mode that he gets into, and how he kind of
he wears
flip flops. That's the best way to put it, because it's not like he says jokes. It's more of just he speaks in the moment, and he doesn't really sugarcoat things, but he also doesn't really try to play up, hold on to like this completely super serious persona. And combine that with what Benicio del Toro is doing, who's like a beast in this movie. It's just great. And I think Emily Blunt coming into this role, I love that she just kind of exists in this movie, and that you get to follow along with her because she's just so out of the loop, and so are you, but you're trying to catch on to things, and the way it kind of reveals itself over time, and you find out kind of whose movie it really is.
Right.
I just found all that really fascinating. And obviously it looks and sounds great. I mean, that just kind of goes without saying at this point. It does. It's just a great stylistic experience.
I think Emily Blunt gives a solid performance, but there were aspects to her character that were a little bit regrettable. I really wish the script had allowed her to be a bit more shrewd. She's really kind of not really knowledgeable. I mean, she knows what she's doing, but she doesn't know at all what's going on. And she kind of goes through the film kind of like, what's happening here? And I can't spoil it, but there's a part in the film where she sort of lets her guard down, and she acts badly, and then she has to be rescued essentially from her assailant. It's just, so she's a little bit of a damsel in this film, and I just feel like, I don't know, with this year 2015, with Mad Max and all the things that we've been seeing more, this character is a little bit of a throwback. I still think her performance is solid, and I don't fault the film for it, but I didn't think that the performance was anything revelatory, in the same way that I do feel like Benicio del Toro is quite good. So, I mean, I think he stands out. But I found Emily Blunt's character a bit of a throwback.
Yeah, see, I would probably disagree with the damsel in distress part, but I would agree that it's just, I found her to be too green for what she's doing, and the reason why is because there's...
Why is she too green? She was chosen operation.
Here's... You gotta let me explain. So they have this meeting with her division head, and they're like, she's been in this for 18 months, and she's been doing all this stuff for this for this rescue operation. And I was like, wait a minute, she's been doing all this, but she doesn't know who some of these people are, or she doesn't really see the larger picture in which this drug trade and drug cartels, how they work. So I agree with Mark on that part, which is just, why did you paint her in two different ways where she's not green? She's actually really experienced. Her partner's green. Like, it's not 18 months. She's been doing it for 3 years. Her partner's been doing it for 18 months. And I was like, that's weird. That's why I didn't like that it was sort of telling you that Emily Blunt is here for the ride along, but she's so in the dark about things. And yes, things
she's
get
doing
revealed.
A different job for years. She's been involved in the positions she had, but it's not the one that's focused on the war on drugs.
Sure, and that's what the movie is presenting, which is,
right.
Hey, you've
she
been
was
doing
like
this
a
part.
Hostage rescue person, and she's supposed to be very good at that job, but now she's put
hostage
into
rescue
this...
in relation to all these drug cartels.
Right. No. So this job is new for her, and I think maybe a little bit they kind of exploited her a little bit. I mean, like, they were kind of
totally.
They
say that too. Yeah.
They wanted, right. I mean, that's implicit in the script. But, like, I've heard people compare this film in some ways to Silence of the Lambs. And I will say, Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs is light years ahead of Emily Blunt in this film.
It's a more complex character.
Yeah.
And there's more of a two-hander going on between her and the. Okay.
No, but I see that. I see that point of view.
In terms of. Yeah, in terms of that, well, like, in terms of, like, Silence of the Lambs comparison is, like, the one thing, Emily Blunt's character in this isn't really doing detective work, more like she's a part of the team and just trying to offer what little expertise that she has, and then she realizes that she's sort of out of her depth, versus, like, Clarice actively trying to solve a case. Like, the thing for me with Emily Blunt's character is that, at near the end, I got frustrated But then I realized that, like, my frustrations were good because it was all based on the character. Like, even though she was green and she makes certain decisions, like, that's I think the weaknesses of the character and how she acts within this world are actually strengths for, like, how to have a solid character. We don't need her to be the super strong woman, and she does make poor decisions once or twice. But, like, that's just all a part of her being sort of the audience surrogate, as well as just being somebody new to a world that, like, I mean, she's been tangentially involved in sort of the war on drugs, but she's never been full on in it. So it made sense to me.
And I get that we, the audience, are supposed to be a little bit, like, scared for her, and then she's scared, and so we're supposed to share in that. So, I mean, she serves a purpose. So, I mean, I understand that. It's just that I just didn't feel like her character. I didn't respond to her character as much as I did to, like, Benicio del Toro, for example.
Well, that's right. Why it was so interesting for me to watch, because, and sort of think about, is, like, coming out of the theater, I was like, wow, this was structured really weird. Like, we spend significant portions of time with other people, and it's like, if you look at the movie sort of as just, like, like we've been talking about tone a lot, if we just look at it as, like, a tone or just, like, a look in a particular world, then it, some of those things don't feel so jarring, because it's like a patchwork of things that just all happen to be centered around one team doing something.
And that's what works for me so well. That's what I responded to, and that's what makes me able to kind of put aside the idea that these aren't the most in-depth of characters that we're getting, and just kind of seeing a world that's been developed, and just how well I can appreciate that by having, you know, such good actors in the various spots that we need them to be, along with, you know, there's a supporting cast here that's pretty solid too, but having, you know, Benicio del Toro, who's not an actor that really needs to, you know, do too much monologuing in his film. Like, I mean, it was nice if you saw, like, a really intense Benicio del Toro monologue. Like, he talks every now and then, but, like, he
collector.
The clerk. Yeah.
really needs that Infinity Stone.
But just, like, his presence is just enough for me, and, like, that stands to reason for, like, a number of these characters in this film.
Right.
But in the midst of this kind of the unfolding of what we're seeing in this war on drugs, and you mentioned Silence of the Lambs as a comparison point, I see it's kind of this counter to Traffic, a film I love. Traffic. I mean, if anything, it's like a mix of Silence of the Lambs and Traffic, right. But, like, Traffic has this, not necessarily, like, an optimistic look at the war on drugs, but it has this kind of a perspective that, you know, makes you kind of think things can be tied up eventually or something like that. This film is happy to kind of just dwell in the idea that just nothing's going to, like, change.
Traffic is a great comparison because it is a sort of a similar theme. It is much more detailed, though.
Yes, it is.
This is kind of a different, this is going for a different kind of a thing.
And I think that's what I enjoyed about it, too. And Terrence used the word patchwork. That's how it, when you – so, again, the movie itself, it's kind of telling you – or the marketing is kind of selling you on, hey, follow Emily Blunt, whatever. But when you step away from it and you've seen it in its entirety, the patchwork of it is such that, hey, this is what happens. These are the kind of the actions that we might take, but this is an isolated case. And we'll just give you hints about how things kind of go down, why we use some agencies and whatever else. And that's – what's unique about it. And then whereas Traffic, you do have these glimpses of how drugs affect particular groups of people, and it goes into length about how they fight the war on drugs. And again, this one is unique in that it doesn't do that, and I do appreciate it for that, because I think, Aaron, you had mentioned, like, the idea of it is there at the end of the movie, where it's, you know, things like this do happen, and all these all these drug cartels, they just will come out of the woodwork, so you have to do these dramatic things, and sometimes it gets really messy, and it's not what people like, but it's really probably what happens.
There's an ideal greater good here, but even within that, I mean, there's a deeper set of things happening, which is based off some of the things we learn about certain characters. I have to be so vague.
Well,
certain,
one of the best lines I would say to characterize what we're talking about right now is, I think Josh Brolin is talking to Emily Blunt. He's like, these decisions don't come from me. They come from people who are elected into office, and I don't even see them. Or it's not her, but it's some other guy that says it. But that's the core concept of, it's like, this is a specific detailed look at what that action from Washington, you know, Quantico, Langley, where that came from, and this is the execution of that idea that took months of planning.
It is a film about, like, I mean, you mentioned a lack of details. It's a film more about, like, process of just seeing, just kind of, which is something I always love in film. That's something that I really enjoy seeing. That's, well, there's a lot of directors that handle that kind of thing well, of just showing you, not necessarily, like, the details of why things are happening, but just kind of how things are put together, how they go about, how they're executed and whatnot. I enjoy seeing that kind of thing.
It's a movie with atmosphere, and yeah, there's a right part where they're going into Juarez, and
which is
they
intense.
See those
intense
bodies right hanging from the overpass. That's a chilling scene, and it's a signal of, like, okay, this is going to be a rough ride. This is not going to be like a walk in the park. We're going to meet some pretty nasty people. And that was just a scene, an image that haunts you, that signals that, you know, those are great. And I mean, I don't know if you give credit to the director for that, if you give it to Roger Deakins, shot the film beautifully. So that's why I just think that there's scene after scene here that I just love the way it's shot and the way, yeah. I mean, there's, you can show the thing, but then there's a way of presenting it, and he presents it really well, and he better get nominated. I don't know. I mean, I don't forget how many times he's been nominated. It's hard to say whether he deserves a win, because there's so many films that are still left to come out, but
he got nominated for Prisoners, right?
Yeah, yes. That was okay.
Right. And he is, I'm already hearing buzz for Roger Deakins, so it seems like he's definitely going to be one of the names in contention. So
he's had 12 nominations.
Right. No wins.
And zero wins.
Yeah. And one of the last things that I'll say about this is just, much the way that Prisoners kind of gives you a sense, Dennis Villeneuve. Dennis, yeah. I know a Greg Villeneuve, that's why I said Greg. But Dennis, he gives you a portrayal of characters that you're not really sure who they are just yet. And that's what I liked about this movie, is I wasn't sure who to trust.
Right.
And as the movie goes on, you kind of get a sense, but even then, you're not really sure. And as it unfolds toward the end, there's some good guys and there's some good guys. So
I'm I'm just happy to see Benicio del Toro in a role like this. Like, I feel I haven't
great, yeah.
I haven't seen him, like, do something that's, like, really caught my attention in a while. Like, I've I mean, he's been in play. I liked him in Inherent Vice because he's just kind of palling around with Joaquin, him and Josh Brolin again, that team up. And, like, Guardians, he, you know, gets to wear a funny wig and speak in a funny voice. But that seems like a lot of his roles. I mean, Che was, like, the last, like, thing that, like, really gave
the
him
last,
some,
like,
substance.
Dramatic role that he had.
Like, with big substance, because the Wolfman certainly wasn't that.
He was in Savages.
Yeah, he was in Savages. So anyway,
that was a movie.
Yes, it was.
I forget.
Are you sure?
Playing Savages,
like a random hitman.
The jury's still out on it, but.
Seeing Benicio del Toro in a role like this, that's fairly straightforward in terms of, like, what he has to do. Like, he doesn't have to wear a wig. He doesn't have to do, like, a funny accent or anything like that. He just gets to play, like, a guy. But he's so intense and he's just great in this movie. Like, it's you want to see more del Toro. And given that Dennis Villeneuve is apparently, like, they're considering sequel ideas, I assume it would probably follow him.
I saw that too, and I was wondering where they might go with a sequel. It'd either be a prequel probably, but his backstory is very limited, but you get a sense of what it is, and again, there's some gray area as to what his intentions are. However, they make a good point of, you know, we find the people who are willing to go far and wide for defeating the people that we want to get killed. So, you know, take it as you will of what his motivations are or where his allegiances lie. He just does the job.
And last thing, I know Villeneuve is apparently, he and Deakins are teaming back up again for whatever this Blade Runner sequel is supposed to be. I can't say I'm all interested in seeing a Blade Runner sequel, but I am on Team Villeneuve. So, I mean, if they're going to do something, I hope at least
they've got good people involved.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, I can only hope for the best for something like that.
Apparently, he's also doing a movie called The Story of Your Life, which is, I'm thinking, a One Direction movie.
Or
it's not.
there's a social D joke there, but okay. All right. Why is that a One Direction joke?
Because they have a song called Story of My Life.
Okay, so I don't go to their concerts like you do. Okay, moving on. When would you recommend seeing Sicario, Abe?
I'd say you can watch it in theaters.
Mark?
Theaters.
All right.
Theaters.
Okay, cool. We're all in agreement on that then. Sicario, see it. I believe it spread wider this past weekend, but it spreads everywhere.
I think everywhere
next weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, after you see The Martian, you can go and see Sicario.
Feel good movie of the year.
Exactly. Yeah. See Sicario second, obviously, for people to feel good. Did come in 10th place this weekend, by the way. The last weekend it was like only in 6 theaters and it had a huge per average. This weekend, you know, still not in like a crazy amount of theaters, but for you know, good enough to knock it into the top 10 of the box office. So nice. Good on them.
Yeah, good on them.
I think it's only in 59 theaters.
Yeah,
that's limited. Extremely yeah. good to yeah. be top 10
for sure.
59 theaters? That's wow.
That's not many.
No, I thought it was in more than that, but when I hear that number, that's like that's amazing.
Yeah, people like that Blunt Brolin Benicio combo.
Yeah. The triple B platter from yeah. Denny's.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on. Let's get to our sponsor for the week. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible content includes over 180,000 audiobooks for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook download of your choice. You can go to audibletrial.com/podcast. You can download a free audiobook. You can try out their membership. If you don't like the membership, you can get rid of it. But you get to keep that book that you downloaded for free. It's just that easy. Yeah.
F-R-E-E, free.
Yes. Abe, we haven't recommended a book in a while. Do you have anything you want to recommend?
We haven't recommended anything in a while, but...
How about The Martian? How about that?
Yeah, I actually am reading that right now.
Well, hurry up and finish it.
We
have a movie to review next week, Abe.
Okay. I know. I gotta see what happens. It's very intriguing.
Yeah, good. Anyway.
To be a winner, read.
Or listen at audibletrial.com/hotnowpodcast. All right. That's enough of that nonsense. Let's move on. Let's get to our feedback.
Feedback. All right.
That was good. Let's get into this here. This is where we go over the various questions and answers that we received on our Facebook page, facebook.com/shoutnowpodcast, where we have all these very lovely answers that our listeners provided us here. Abe, why don't you start this one off?
Yeah. So the first question we asked everyone is, who are your favorite female action heroes? Manish writes Angel of Verdun, a.k.a. Rita Vertrasky from Better Luck Tomorrow.
Remember Emily Blunt's character in Better Luck Tomorrow?
In that Asian drama about Orange County folks, high school teenagers? Yeah, no. From The Edge of Tomorrow. And he also writes Black Widow from the Avengers series. Justin writes Ripley, Sarah Walker from Chuck, Mrs. Smith, Trinity, Yu Shu Lian, and Jen Yu, and Hit Girl. I don't know who those two previous ones were, but I'll look them up later, unless somebody knows.
The characters he listed, Yu Shu Lian and Jen Yu, those from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh, okay, got it.
I had a feeling I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. From the show, Maxwell has Ripley, The Bride, Rita Vertrasky, Sarah Connor, Katniss. From TV, he's got Buffy, Sydney Bristow, Nikita, Maggie Q version, Bryn of Tarth, Sarah Walker, and Black Canary, Katie Lotz.
Did anybody say Princess Leia?
No one said Princess
Nobody
Leia.
Nobody said Princess Leia.
Oh, wow.
We've got three more. We'll see what they say. Yeah. Philip has whoever Jennifer Garner is playing, including Elektra, I guess. He didn't have the Elektra part. I did. Friend of the show, Joe Jan, says Charlize Theron in Mad Max, so Furiosa. And lastly, Tyler writes, nobody beats Ellen Ripley.
Mark, you got Princess Leia. That's what you're going with.
Yeah. Oh, what if I said big bada boom?
Lilu Dallas multipass?
Yes. So her and Elastigirl from The Incredibles.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, Elastigirl.
Elastigirl.
Mrs. Incredible.
And they got busy.
We're close, though. I call her Elastigirl.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Someone said Sarah Connor, right? Yeah, that's on there. Okay.
Somebody said Sarah Connor.
Making sure.
Oh, gosh. I would say Ripley and Sarah Connor would have to be like the top two answers. For
sure. Let's not forget Lucy, right? Am I right?
From Peanuts?
No, from Lucy.
From the movie Lucy.
Oh, Lucy, yeah. She uses 100% of her brain. Right.
Yeah. Okay, next question. What are your favorite Benicio del Toro roles? Manish writes, he's so great in everything, but for me, he played one of the most insane 007 henchmen in License to Kill. It's a fun callback. Philip writes, mumble, 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 suspects, mumble, mumble. And then Justin writes, the usual suspects. I love that movie. He was cool as the collector also. What are your favorite Benicio del Toro roles, guys?
I think we said Traffic?
No one said Traffic.
No
I think
one said Traffic, yeah.
I think it's great in Traffic. But I think he's terrifying at Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. His role in that movie as this drugged out lawyer for Johnny Depp's character. There's a scene towards the end of that movie where they're in a restaurant, and just the way he handles this scene, it's just like he's just an awful human being. And he's like, but he'd be terrible. Like, if I were to encounter this person in real life, which seems like a real life person you could probably encounter, I would not want to be involved with this person.
He's also good as a human pest dispenser.
On Sin City?
So, yeah. In Sin City, yeah, that was going to be my choice other than Traffic.
And there's Frankie Fourfingers in Snatch, of course.
Frankie Fourfingers.
Yeah. And he was in 21 Grams.
He's good in that movie, yeah.
Traffic is still my pick.
Yeah, I love Traffic. I think that's a great.
I love his story arc in Traffic, or his storyline in Traffic, a lot. It's probably one of my favorite to follow.
I love since his storyline kind of ends the film. I love that ending of Traffic. It's one of my favorite endings of in Traffic. I think it's a poignant way to end that film. And it's a Brian Eno track, I believe, that's kind of that provides the sound at the end. Anyway.
Yeah.
What are the most obscure movie titles for films that you love? Example, Sicario or Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? So just kind of like movie titles that seem really strange, but you love those movies anyway. Rob has The Hudsucker Proxy, A Clockwork Orange, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He realizes the first two thirds were books, but they're still obscure titles. Manish writes Volver. Tyler writes Three Times, The Iceman, and Peppermint Candy.
Hmm.
And Justin writes Wild Wild West, You Knew It Was Coming.
You son of a bitch.
But really, only ones I could think of was The Onion Field and To Live and Die in L.A., named after the Wayne Chung song, of course. They provided the score. They wrote the song for the movie.
Hudsucker Proxy is a very good, it's a good example of a strange title, but I really like that movie.
I think Snatch is a good example, actually.
Snatch is a good example, too. Yeah.
Other random ones?
Any Given Sunday. No, that's not. I'm just kidding.
Cloverfield?
Yeah.
Cloverfield? Yeah.
I'm looking at my DVD shelf right now. trying to find titles. Yeah, maybe Ex Machina, actually.
Ex Machina? Hot Fuzz?
No, that makes sense.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
There you go.
Let's see. That Taylor Lautner movie, Abduction, which features no abduction.
Is that the one where his parents were secret agents and he's also a secret agent?
Yes, but he was not abducted. that's part of it.
John Singleton for you.
Classic John Singleton.
Boys on the Hood and then Abduction. All right, let's move on.
Should we move on? Can we do this more?
We could, if you want to.
I can't. If I think of any, I'll just shout them out randomly.
Just shout it out randomly. Don't. No context.
Exactly.
Yeah. Last question we asked everyone is, what is your favorite recent crime thriller? Or thrillers. Manish says, not sure if it counts, but The Town comes to mind. And yeah, that's a good crime thriller. Justin has Mr. Robot, but it's not a movie. Most recent was Focus, and it was pretty good. And last one, Philip has Gone Girl.
There's plenty of good crime thrillers.
Most Violent Year.
Most Violent Year, yeah.
Most Violent. Oh, what was the one with...
I got the answer. What? Nightcrawler.
Uh-huh. I was going to say Nightcrawler. That was my answer.
I love that film.
Oh, man. I'm sure that there's some guy that looks like that in L.A. right now working. Yeah, he's just trying to get famous on the news.
Abe, you love The Counselor, right? So that could be on.
I do love The Counselor, right?
Oh, no.
I'm kidding.
All right. Let's move on here. Let's get to some questions. We got one question here. This one's from Justin. I think we had this question before, but we have different guests on all the time, so it's always fun to revisit this one. What are some of your favorite guilty pleasure movies? I.e., I really like Notting Hill. That's from him. Obviously, he also loves Wild Wild West, but yes. I don't think he even considers that a guilty pleasure at this point.
No, I think he actually just likes Wild Wild West.
Yeah. Mark, I think you've even answered this one before, but I want to give you the reins again on it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to preface my response by saying, whenever I hear this question, I want to hear a real guilty pleasure. I don't want to hear some people always give some movie that's actually a really respected film.
Yeah, like someone talked about that about Jurassic Park the other day. He's like, why is it a guilty pleasure? It's like Jurassic Park.
That's just one of the best films of the 90s.
Or they pick some romance. Like, I mean, like with all due respect to the gentleman that answered, Notting Hill is not embarrassing. That's a that's a great film. I don't see that. But when I say guilty pleasure, yeah, when it's a guilty pleasure, it should be something you're actually embarrassed to admit. Like, you actually sheepishly say, I actually like this film, and some people might actually like you less because you like the film.
Wow.
So anyway, with that said,
that's a good definition.
It's a good setup.
I'm among friends here, right? I can admit this, but
of course,
I love the movie Xanadu.
Get out.
Mark Hoban, we're just going to edit you out of this episode.
Most of the film is just kind of pleasant fluff, but it really reaches this height of lunacy in the climactic roller disco scene. It is just something to behold, and if you haven't seen it, go. You must rent it, because it's just ridiculous. It's got Gene Kelly. It has, like, it came out in 1980, so it's this kind of weird halfway between the disco era and then the 80s style. And so you've got, like, breakdancing mixed with disco, and it's sort of like halfway between the two. And it's just, I mean, the way the people are dressed and they're acting, and then they dance and they stomp their feet and they're shout. They literally chant Xanadu for like the first 5 minutes of the number. It's just bizarre. I mean, it's like unlike anything.
Terrence, you want to follow that up with anything?
Well, anytime I'm asked this question, I tend to say, like, I don't necessarily know if I'm embarrassed about any movies that I like.
Agreed.
Even if other people hate them.
I'm not embarrassed about anything.
Yeah, I'm not embarrassed at all. No shame in my game.
what Batman movie is the one with Uma Thurman and...
Oh, Batman and Robin.
Batman
yeah,
and
Robin. That one. That's I legitimately enjoy that film.
I enjoy that one. I mean, on a certain level.
I don't think it's nearly. I don't think it's nearly as bad as it's given credit for. But
yeah, that would be mine.
And it is, but it's enjoyably bad. I mean, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger is really. I mean, and Uma Thurman too. She's so.
Uma Thurman is not very good in that movie.
Right. He says, "My garden needs tending."
This is,
right.
Yeah. See, that's the thing there, where it's like Arnold gets a lot of the rap here. It's like, well, Arnold's never known for, like, his dramatic acting. What's Uma Thurman's excuse?
Didn't The Avengers come out that year with her too, or was that
The Avengers came out the year later?
Okay, a year later, 1998.
Yeah,
yeah.
She played the Hulk.
Oh God!
Sad Dr. Bruce Is Banner.
Yeah, that's the female version of Bruce. Bruce Is. Good job, him. Yeah. What are yours? You got one?
Jingle All the Way. I love that movie. Christmas classic, Jingle All the Way, and Jason X. There's this part.
Jason X is fantastic. Oh my God!
There's a part of Jason X where he kills. An old cook guy by putting his head in boiling oil, and he pulls it out and it's just melted. And then there's another part where the guy, he's the protagonist, he's handcuffed behind his back, and he does a jump, and he throws his handcuffs under his legs to run out of the police station. It's kind of fun. It's one of
the
space
right Jason
movies.
Movie?
What's that?
What movie are you talking about?
Jason X.
Jason's where that's where he goes to space.
He's in space. Wait, which maybe that's a different Jason.
I don't know what one you're talking about, but it's not that one.
All right, but anyway, Jason X is still pretty fun though.
Because
there's a lot of
the greatest kill of Jason X is, like, he wakes up, he grabs his girl that's next to him, he shoves her face in, like, cryogenic liquid, it freezes her face, which you see happen. Then he takes the head out and smashes the table.
It, yeah. Well, the other worst, it's not even worse, but it's another fun moment is when the doctor is doing an autopsy and he just starts eating Jason.
I think you're thinking of a different Jason movie at this point.
Maybe it is. Anyway, I still like Jason X.
Okay. I think we both like Snakes on a Plane more than most people, I think.
I really enjoyed it. I watched it in hotel room, and I didn't think I was going to like it, and I just ended up watching the entire thing.
Yeah.
But that's trying to be bad. Like, I mean, it's sort of like it's fully aware that it's a sort of a silly movie.
Yeah, but
nobody told Sam Jackson.
We still like the movie.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not denying the entertainment value.
Not everyone was on board with the snakes on it. I mean, it was a flop. Like, like, it didn't work out. But no, there's a lot of 90s action that I enjoy quite a bit. Something like Hard Rain with Christian Slater, which nobody seems to like.
Wait, is that the one? What's the one with Michael Douglas? Black Rain?
Black Rain.
Black Rain, okay.
That's what I was thinking, Black Rain.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. Isn't
Hard Rain
supposed to be
hard
Rain,
where he's
hard
trying to,
movie?
He's trying to he works like in an armored car, and Morgan Freeman and his band of cronies try to steal the money, and he's hiding the money from them, and it's raining. It's raining a lot. It's Hard Rain.
You need to get a water stop here.
But yeah, yeah, it's generally a lot of kind of Anaconda, I think, is one that comes to mind.
Oh yeah, I love
this thing said they're that big.
Yeah. You got to say that slower. You got to really enunciate the Ice Cube line. There's snakes out there that big. But my all-time, my go-to guilty pleasure is the Big Hit with Mark Wahlberg, of course.
Oh yeah, with the that's one of the last times I've seen Antonio Sabato Jr.
Yeah, and him, Lou Diamond Phillips, Bo.
Well, Lou Diamond Phillips is in 33 coming out. I'm waiting to see how it goes.
And action superstar Elliot Gould, all in that movie. It's fantastic.
Yeah, another one that kind of reminds me, I think of when I think of Anaconda, is Congo. I also actually kind of enjoy that film.
Where you are the endangered species.
Do you remember Congo?
Yeah, that's the tagline of the movie.
Yeah, I mean,
it's got a good movie poster.
They have the part where they have, it's been a long time, but they talk and they move their hands and they're like, bad monkey, yes. Go away. Like, that's like, I don't know, that when I saw
Space
that.
You.
Well, there's Delroy Lindo yelling at Tim Curry, put down my sesame cake, which is the killer. Destroys me. I might have to put that in the show notes now, because that line is killer. Anyway, let's see.
It's got a good cast, too.
It has a great cast. Bruce Campbell, Laurel Linney, Ernie Hudson.
Academy Award nominee, Laurel Linney?
Tim Curry, as mentioned. I mean, there's a lot of random, like,
Ernie Hudson, Tim Curry, Jodan Baker.
That movie, Congo.
Most people I run into hate that film, so I always feel like when I say, oh, I kind of like it.
It's a movie where, like, it's a Michael Crichton novel, and John Patrick Shanley, who, you know, did Doubt and Moonstruck, he was just, like, given the assignment, didn't read the book, and just, like, came up with something. Like, that's what happened.
Yeah, I'll read the Cliff Notes version.
That's feedback.
feedback. Man, that was great.
That was better. It was less practicing and everything.
Yeah.
All right. What time is it?
I think, Aaron, I'm checking my watch here. It might be time for some games. Just how they play it on the border.
Yeah.
It was nice.
That was, of course, the improv theme for games. And this week I have a game called The Hit Is On.
The Hit Is On.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
The Hit Is On.
The Hit Is On.
This is a movie. This is a game. I'm going to read a quote from a movie said by a hitman.
The Hit Is On.
All these movies generally involve hitmen of some kind, and you have to identify the movie.
Okay.
Some of these
quotes. Buzz in with our name.
Yeah, buzz in with your name. Just shout out your name to buzz in. Some of these are more elaborate than others, but here we go.
Okay.
All right. You guys ready?
Yeah.
The heat is on.
Terrence, you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Here's the first one. No women, no kids. No women, no kids.
Ask for a phone a friend.
Can we get the year?
1994.
Oh, Abe.
Yes.
Heat.
No.
Ooh. Mark, the professional.
The professional, or Leon, is the correct answer.
Okay.
Mark is on the board. Heat's 95.
The heat is on.
Here's the next
one. Yeah, Abe, you are way off.
Sorry.
If my answers frighten you, then you should cease asking scary questions.
Oh, Abe.
Yep.
Jules.
In
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction is the correct answer.
Yeah.
I like that line.
That's a good line.
Here's the next one. Are you Treadstone?
Terrence.
Yes.
Born Ultimatum?
Nope.
Oof.
Mark, Born Identity?
The Born Identity is the correct answer.
That was just a total guess.
When in doubt, go with the original.
I was about to cycle through them.
Where are my chems? That's not one of them. I'm kidding.
That's a French Jose Cordova's line.
Okay. Here's the next one. Wiggle your big toe.
Abe. Kill Bill, Volume 1.
That is the correct answer. Okay. Here's the next one. I'm going to read this whole thing.
Okay. So we should wait until you're done.
Yes. Ken, I grew up in Dublin. I love Dublin. If I grew up on a farm and I was retarded, Bruges might impress me, but I didn't, so it doesn't.
Abe.
Parents in Bruges.
Terrence,
that's correct.
Is correct.
I don't know what gave it away.
I think it might have been the accent. It was very good.
Or the word. Was it good?
Yeah. I could really hear the, you know, the Scottish? Irish?
Irish.
Irish.
You know, Dublin.
Dublin, right, of course.
All right, here's the next one. What's the most you ever lost in a coin toss?
Terrence, No Country for Old Men.
Terrence.
Boom.
That's correct. Okay.
Terrence is running away with this, by the way. He's got like four of them.
Man, I had to redeem myself after Bourne.
You're all tied with two, but good job. Okay. Next one. It's a lengthy one. They all have husbands and wives and children and houses and dogs and, you know, they've all made themselves part of something and they can talk about what they do. What am I going to say? I killed the president of Paraguay with a fork. How have you been?
Abe?
Mm-hmm.
Gross Point Blank?
Gross Point Blank is the correct answer.
Oh, I was like, that sounds like a sarcastic John Cusack line.
Say anything.
Yeah, right.
And he became a kickboxer and then he went to Gross Point Blank. It all adds up. Then he got rid of that. He sold all his stuff. He went to start a record store. It makes sense.
It all makes sense, yeah.
Then he lost.
Still Jeremy Piven.
And he lost his wife and got a son and became the Martian. There's a movie called The Martian with John Cusack. Okay, moving on. Next one. Guy gets on a subway and dies. Think anybody will notice?
Abe. Mm-hmm. Collateral.
Collateral is the correct answer. Mark's still there, right?
He's still there.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
I'm just.
I got you.
Not knowing it. The heat
is on. Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life.
I feel like Raymond Shaw's a dead giveaway.
Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human
being. Oh, Manchurian Candidate.
Manchurian Candidate is the correct answer. That's a great movie.
Talking about the original? Or
the original. Why would you jump to the remake? I don't mind the remake.
Pleasure.
I don't think fun. Okay. It's got Liev Schreiber. He's great in it.
Ray Donovan himself before he was Ray Donovan.
Oh, gosh. Angela Lansbury is so good in that film. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anybody who like knows her from Murder, She Wrote, she's like
exactly, yeah. Evil. Yeah.
She's also great as Mrs. Potts.
yeah, same role. okay. Let me finish this one, too. People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
Abe. Mm-hmm. John Wick.
John Wick is the correct answer. I personally think I nailed that, Keanu.
That was pretty good. It was pretty raspy.
I don't remember a single line of dialogue from that movie.
That's like you just remember the kill count?
That was in every ad. Yes. That was like every ad. I'm thinking I'm back. Hope he says it in John Wick 2. Still wicking.
The Wickening.
Yeah, the wickening.
The Wickening.
John Wick, the Wicker Man.
The bees!
That's where they use voodoo to try and get him by building a wooden version of John Wick.
Right.
And set it on fire.
In effigy.
Yeah. All right. Last one. There are only murderers in this room, Michael. Open your eyes. This is the life we chose, the life we lead. And there's only one guarantee. None of us will see heaven. There are only murderers in this room, Michael.
Oh, Mark. Road to Perdition.
The Road to Perdition is the correct answer. Did he win for that movie, Paul Newman?
Paul Newman?
No.
Paul Thomas Newman or Paul Newman?
Yeah,
the
Paul
only thing
Thomas
he's ever won was Color of Money.
Okay, he was nominated for that movie.
Yes.
Yeah. What was that year? 2002? Who's winning 2002?
Wow, that was 2002?
Yeah.
Seems like a little bit more recent, but holy cow, that was a while ago.
So yesterday, Tom Hanks was gunning people down with the time.
I know, yeah.
Who won Best Supporting Actor in 2002? Let's see here.
Best Supporting Actor 2002?
Chris Cooper, Adaptation.
Okay.
Right. He beat Christopher Walken in Catch Me If You Can, Two Mice, Fall in a Bucket of Cream, John C. Reilly in Chicago, the Ed Harris in The Hours, and Paul Newman in Road to Perdition. It's a good year.
Yeah, it was a good year.
The year in general is like, meh, Chicago, Best Picture. Who remembers Chicago? Nobody.
Chicago.
Excuse me?
You a Chicago fan?
Like, I love Chicago. Like
getting on your nerves now with that Rob Marshall joint?
It's a raw there.
I think in the world of musicals of the last 20 years, it's one of the greats.
Fair enough. That's all I got for that.
I know you don't like recent musicals, Aaron.
I don't dislike music.
I mean, Les Miserables, how did you feel about that?
It's not like I was alone and not thinking Les Miserables was all that.
Yeah.
But I mean, these are the...
Rock of Ages was great.
Oh, God.
I love
Hairspray was great. No.
Hairspray is...
A lot of people love Hairspray.
I love Hairspray.
I haven't seen it.
What did you guys think of Hedwig and the Angry Inch?
I didn't see it.
2000.
I haven't seen it yet.
So that's a pretty good musical movie.
Okay.
I love Sweeney Todd.
The Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Yes. I'm trying to think of what are the other great movie musicals that have come out in the last 20 years besides
Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge is a great movie. That I finally saw, Mark.
When did you see Moulin Rouge, Aaron?
Yeah, Mark, you're right. It took me a while to see Moulin Rouge. You got me there. Who won this game, by the way? Let me add those points up since we're on this topic. The heat
is on. I feel like there might be a tie.
Let me see here. Hold on. Let's see. All right.
Mm-hmm. 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 Carry the one. Mm-hmm.
All right. In third place, Terrence. In second place, Mark Hoban. In first place, Abe. You are the winner this week of games.
You didn't see it, but I'm fist pumping right now because I'm so jacked that I won. The heat
is on. Congratulations, Abe.
Thank you.
It was a close game. It was only by one.
I feel like the house cheated.
But you got one on the board, so that's what counts.
Valiant effort.
Yes.
All right.
You too, Mark.
That was games. Let's move on now to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week, and we have a few here. First up is Entourage. Oh, yeah!
Did you guys see this movie?
I saw it.
Okay. Not worth it?
If you like the show, then you definitely
probably like the movie.
If you tolerated most of the show, then you'll kind of enjoy the movie, maybe.
Okay.
Yes, all that.
All that.
Next up is Spy.
Yeah, go see it.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Then we have Cop Car with Kevin Bacon. I like
mixed things, but I'm intrigued by it.
I like Cop Car.
Okay.
Then we have The Connection with Jean Dujardin. I like this movie. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad at all. I think it was quite good. I think Jean Dujardin was quite good. I think the French actor that plays the villain in this movie, or the kind of the opposing side of the law, I liked it as well. It's the French side of the French Connection. Like it's what's going on in France during the same period in the 70s. Then we have, I noticed this, which humored me, The Bear 25th Anniversary Edition.
Oh, man, the Bear from 1980 something.
25 years ago,
25
perhaps?
Years ago?
Yeah, it's that Bear.
I remember that movie because I remember crying watching that when I was like 6 or something like that, and the next day I was still sad.
But yeah, that's I saw that, I was like, oh, that's funny. Checky Cario in The Bear. Then we have Outlander Season 1, Volume 2. I feel like I read Season 1, Volume 1 before, so I guess I wanted to follow that up, so I wrote that down. And then we have Grimm Season 4, also out this week. I want to give an update on some of these Blu-rays I've been watching lately, because I've been watching the special features on Mad Max and Furious 7. It's pretty incredible how, like, Furious 7, there's a lot of practical stuff in that. Like, it's almost all practical, besides, like, some obvious stuff. Like, the way
like
they did...
cars coming out of an airplane?
They dropped
that
cars out of airplanes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did that. They filmed cars falling out of airplanes and filmed cars landing onto the ground with parachutes. It's fantastic. And like a scene with Paul Walker running off the back of a trailer while it's going off the cliff. There was a guy running off the back of a trailer while it was going off the back of a cliff. Oh. It's like there's so much stuff here. The only like CG stuff is like just like background things or like a building jump between buildings, which they still kind of did stuff to make it work. Like, it's just neat.
What do you think will it get any technical nominations at the Oscars? Sound?
No,
anything?
I don't think so.
No.
For Furious 7, no.
Fury Road has a decent shot.
I think because,
Fury Road has a possibility of being nominated for Best Picture.
Best Picture.
It's hard to count. I mean, maybe like a sound, maybe. Maybe?
Could be. Sound editing? I don't know.
I mean, being, you know,
oh,
one of the
best
biggest...
Best song, right?
Perhaps.
It could, yeah,
yes,
probably.
That's true.
Best song. Wiz Khalifa is going to perform.
Tugs at the heartstrings.
I mean, it is. I mean, yeah, it's the Paul Walker Died song. I mean, that's... Yeah. But like
that was in parentheses, by the way.
I mean, that's what I've been calling
Paul Walker Died song.
Yeah. That's what it's officially.
But I mean, given that it's one of the biggest movies ever, I mean, that can't count
it
against
it
too
much.
It is
one of the biggest songs of the summer too.
Yes, I mean it has a lot going for it in that regard in terms of not being forgotten about completely.
Right.
I'm curious what Jurassic World could get up. I mean, in that
best margarita scene.
Best margarita scene is correct. That's the right answer.
That's the question.
Yeah.
So you're watching the Mad Max Fury Road commentary. How's that?
I fully expect there to be like another edition of this movie at some point because George Miller was talking about how there's like a black and white version with just the score, which I'd love to see because that's like his preferred.
Oh, no dialogue, just score.
Just score.
Wow.
Like isolated score and that. But with that said, I mean, there's like 90 minutes of stuff on here, and it's all good stuff. It's just, you know, looking at like, hey, look at how I storyboarded all of this, and I made it into a movie, and look at all these crazy scenes of like the cars we built and all the crazy stuff we did, and somehow didn't hurt anybody. So there's a lot of that.
Got it.
Let's see. Okay, moving on here. Extremely cool. These are movies that are now on Netflix that we can recommend. I was trying to think of something that kind of fit with Sicario because I didn't really see anything that was like a new release on Netflix that was caught my attention. So I saw Gamora and Blue Velvet were both on Netflix streaming. I was like, yeah, go watch those. Those are great movies.
Rambo First Blood?
Rambo First... It's just First Blood.
First Blood.
Okay. There's First Blood. Then there's...
Rambo colon First Blood Part 2?
Rambo colon First Blood Part 2. Then there's Rambo 3. Then there's just... I think it's just Rambo,
well,
right?
Well, Rambo's 5, isn't it?
No, there's only 4 Rambos.
Oh, okay, yeah, the Rambo is 4.
Or is it John Rambo? It's the most...
No, it's just Rambo.
Next to Fast and Furious, it's the like most complicated movie naming technique scheme. All right, let's see, what else? Next week we're talking about The Martian. This is the new Ridley Scott film with star Matt Damon and a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
Certainly the one...
Everybody from Interstellar is in it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Certainly one to look forward to. And let's see. Lastly, we have what should people go and see now, and what do you plan to see next? And so, yeah, with that, Mark, what would you say people should go see now in theaters?
I would say Sicario. I mean, if it's playing near you.
And what do you plan to see next?
The Martian.
Terrence, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
Everest in IMAX 3D.
All right. Yeah. And what do you see it next?
I have a screening of Brooklyn coming up.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, that's what I'm seeing next.
Abe.
Yeah, I definitely echo, you should check out Sicario. And what I'm going to see next is probably The Martian, if not Hotel Transylvania 2 on a Monday night.
Yeah, yeah, you're a single guy. That's what they do.
Yeah.
yeah, I'd say Sicario for sure. I'd recommend Pawn Sacrifice as well. And I'm seeing Room tomorrow, actually, and I'm very
cool.
I've been very excited to see Room for a while now, so I'm happy to finally be able to see it. All right, so with all that in mind, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work at thecodeofzeke.com. You can find all my recaps of everything I do, as well as me writing about movies daily over at ranthollywood.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose. Hashtag Veep won an Emmy.
Mark Hope.
You can read more of my personal reviews on my blog, fastfilmreviews.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter, Mark_Hoban.
Terrence.
You can find some of my stuff at awardcircuit.com. Follow me on Twitter at Lenoir Tour, LENOIRAUTER.
I always appreciate you spelling it. That helps.
Yeah. That helped me out. I'm going to look it up right now.
Yeah.
And yeah, okay, you can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes and at Audioboom as well as Stitcher.
You can listen to our old episodes over at SoundCloud, Podomatic, and HHWLOD.
You can feel free to email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on Sicario and other films that you've recently seen.
Interact with us over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast or tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And we're still hoping someone can teach us how to use Tumblr more efficiently at outnowpodcast.tumblr.com.
Or if you just want to post random GIFs for us, that'd be great.
Abe, it's pronounced GIFs.
GIFs. Okay. Sorry.
GIFs, no matter what the creator says.
Yeah, I just love peanut butter so much.
I was going to say, choosy moms choose GIF.
Mark's got my back.
All right. So, Terrence, Mark, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you both, guys, for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
For sure. And yeah, we'll be back next week to see if Matt Damon makes it out alive or not on The Martian. But until next time, that's going to do it. So long.
And goodbye. Feedback. Oh, I thought we were going to harmonize, guys.
Can we do it again?
Feedback. All right.
That was good.
We'll work on it for the next time.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. The heat is on.